5.
4.
3.
3.
2.
1.
This is already getting off to a very on-brand start. I just need you guys to know.
All right, 3, 2, 1.
Oh, I think that was perfect.
That is the worst high five I have ever given myself.
That's okay.
One of my hands was just limper than the other. I gave up. My left hand came in hella strong, and my right hand was like, I'm done for the day.
Dead
I'm
fish.
The dominant one. Like, meh. I'm just gonna, yeah.
Yeah, I can only do so much work for the two of us.
Yeah. Well, we have been just getting so many incredible interviews on record I'm both full from the joy and the love and the amazing relationships and conversations of these past few days, but I'm just depleted from yapping so much.
Yeah, a little tired, but like in a good way, like a feeling fulfilled, but sleepy. So you know.
Like just dropped acid at at Woodstock. At Coachella.
Oh, okay. Or Woodstock.
I've never been to Coachella.
Me either. Hey.
I feel like I wouldn't enjoy it, probably.
I would be mad about how dirty I am the whole time.
I don't like the camping.
No. Yeah. I really enjoy like Bamboozled and Warped Tour. Well, Bamboozled, I think they did that for like 3 years. And then Warped Tour, RIP.
Yeah.
Yeah, like one day festival.
They don't
great.
Exist anymore?
I don't know about Bamboozled, but Warped Tour, there's been rumors that it's coming back. I have no idea what's happening, but yeah.
I might be thinking of Lollapalooza, which is still around.
Lollapalooza. Lollapalooza is still around. I think it's getting ready to happen this weekend or something. I don't know.
You're welcome. That I would probably go to. That I would probably enjoy. I don't know why. I have no idea what it is. I don't have no idea what it is. I think that's probably why. I think I already have this like predetermined like the Kardashians and the Jenners go to Coachella, which nothing against them. They're gorgeous women with beautiful senses of fashion and they've built a dynasty, but they're not like, I don't hang out with, please don't take this as an insult. I mean, this is a compliment, but I don't hang out with like the like polished glam squad.
Oh,
like
absolutely
type
not.
Of, like, girl crew. Like, I like to hang out with the weirdos that, like, would drop acid in the desert and then, like, just, like, draw art with the stars and, like, talk about, like, let's have a seance. Who would we invite? Like,
you're either describing Burning Man or, like, just going out camping in the woods and trying to summon ghosts or something. Like, which might be the same. I haven't been to Burning Man, but from what I've heard,
I would never summon ghosts when the only fortress I have to protect myself is a tarp with a bunch of bendy fucking poles. Get out of here.
I mean, if you like put salt around the tent, that's supposed to protect you from demons. I don't know if it works on ghosts. Watch Supernatural. They'll explain it.
Oh, or Charmed, which
or
is what
Charmed.
I grew up on.
Yes.
Love that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Or Hocus Pocus. Again, or the salt is being used to keep witches away, but like, I feel like it would work on ghosts,
so,
right?
Does it have to be, like, is it like a Morton's sea salt? Is it like a Himalayan pink salt?
I have no idea, but.
Are these gourmet ghosts?
So can I tell you a goofy quick story? Hopefully it's quick.
Always.
Great. Okay. Amazing. So This was maybe like 5 or 6 years ago. My friend Annie, for her birthday, we surprised her and we took her to the Queen Mary, which is docked nice. in Long Beach, and it's supposed to be super haunted. And a few friends got a hotel room for the night to hopefully see some ghosts. And so we all get there. We're hanging out. It's at night. And then we decide it's maybe like 9 p.m. It's not super late. But we decide, like, let's go walk around and see if we can find some ghosts. Why not? And there are a few guy friends, but the three that are really involved are my friend Peter, who's like
Parker. Peter Parker.
I wish. My friend Peter, who I think he's about 6'1".
Oh, no.
Tall, lanky.
Oh, no.
My friend AJ, who's also about 6'1", kind of like floppy and goofy. And then my friend Trevor, who's like also 6'1", and looks like a lumberjack. Like, is just built. I think he was wearing a flannel shirt. Do you know where this is going?
I know where this is going because this is the exact reason why I, at 5'9", and someone who doesn't pick up her feet real high, would struggle running from ghosts on a ship. But please continue. Let the people know what kind of misfortunes awaited Peter, Trevor, and the AJ. Third one, AJ. Sorry.
It wasn't really misfortunes. It was just a very cute, like, bromance moment. So I didn't know. So if you look at the three of them and you were to be like, out of these three, who's the most afraid of ghosts? You would probably pick AJ because he has like sweet puppy dog, like floppy. Oh. Like sorry, AJ, if you're listening to this. You're the one I would pick in terms of who's afraid of ghosts.
Because you're floppy.
Because you're, yeah, it's fine. He just, when he talks, his like arms suddenly have no bones. I don't know how to explain it.
That's amazing. Is he a ghost?
He might be. He might be part ghost. Fair. But like, to me, just based off of looks, Trevor would be the one who you'd be like, oh, obviously would gladly go fight a ghost. He looks like the brawny man. Do you know what I mean? So we're getting ready to go ghost hunting, and Trevor gets real quiet and he's like, can I just like stay here? And we were like, what? No. Aww. And he's like, I just, and he like got really nervous and started to maybe shake a little bit. And Trevor and AJ are best friends. And AJ was like, it's going to be okay, dude. Like, don't worry about it. And he's like, okay, I mean, does anybody have like a crucifix or anything? And Annie picks up the only thing that we have that is kind of remotely close to salt, which was garlic salt. And she hands it to him and she's like, this is all we've got. And he was like, what? And she's like, it's close. And according to Supernatural, salt will keep ghosts away. And he's like, okay, okay. And so he's like clutching it for his dear life. And we go outside into the hall to start walking down, like walking to find ghosts. He takes the garlic salt, puts it in the like front pocket of his like plaid button-up shirt. It's there just in case. And he's walking and he's like in the center of the hallway and he's in the center of the group. There's maybe like seven of us and he's trying really hard to be brave. And AJ comes up next to him on one side and like grabs his left hand and is just holding his hand as they walk down the hall. And Peter, who's like behind us and he's kind of like bringing up the rear of the group, he all of a sudden like pushes his way in between me and Jose. And he goes up onto Trevor's other side and like holds his other hand. So it's just these three incredibly tall men just holding hands, like protecting Trevor, who's got garlic salt in his pocket. And it was, I hope that even if my memory starts to go as I get older, that I never forget that moment because it was so cute and so wholesome and like such a good, like, look at these three dudes just being friends. It was really cute. So that's my goofy story.
I believe in bromance. To quote Connor from The Bachelorette. No, that is wholesome and delightful and adorable and not where I thought the story was going. No. I thought you were going to say something about like one or multiple of these tall men got spooked, started running, forgot that the doors are actually circles like hit something. Cause I feel like if that was me, I would start running and I would trip over. Cause they're like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Unless I'm imagining a totally different boat. Well, I'm imagining no. Like a Navy boat.
Yeah, no, this was like a cruise line ship, so the doors were more like a, like, it looked more like normal. A hotel. Yeah, they were normal. But I know where you were going with that. Yeah, just,
like,
no.
Tripping, like running through a porthole.
Oh, that would have been hilarious. No, but it was very cute and very wholesome, and I think about that moment all of the time because the three of them are just, like, so goofy.
That's adorable.
Yeah, they're pretty cute.
Hi, I'm Jules.
Hi, I'm Lex. Hello. Welcome. To the Peony. You know, we're only like 10 minutes in. We remember.
Riffin. Yeah. New boot goofin. Is that still a reference that people use?
It's no. I've never heard that reference. Has it ever been used?
You've never seen the new boot goofin? That like video of the guy that's like, I got new boots. Look at my new boots. I'm just goofing. New boot goofing. Okay, I can't be the only one that knows this.
You're probably not. You're not. But
I'm
not with you. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry for what I'm about to say, but I most recently it re-entered my headspace because Diplo did a video with that dubbed over it. And if that tells you anything about who I am as a human, you're welcome. And also, I'm sorry.
Oh, amazing. Yeah. Well, thanks everybody for tuning in. Yes. We're new boot goofing around with Booklandia. Yeah. So on this week's episode, did a lovely little crossover with Booklandia, which if you have not listened to Booklandia, they are a literary podcast. They go through and they talk about the tropes in novels that they're reading. My favorite question that they answer, they primarily focus on romance novels. So my favorite question is always, did this book make you want to take your clothes off or make you get naked? So that's kind of them in a nutshell. We did the crossover episode. We were on their podcast.
Bridget motherfucking Jones.
Yes. Yeah, we were talking about Bridget Jones, Bridget Jones's Diary, the book, with them. And I believe that episode dropped.
It dropped
Monday?
This week. Tuesday.
Yeah. Tuesday, the 27th.
Monday. It dropped Tuesday, the 27th.
I don't remember.
It literally dropped. It's the latest episode. It just dropped. Why are we yelling at the people? They're never going to come back.
Oh, no. Wait. Come back. Please come back. if you haven't listened to that episode, you can pause this, head over there, listen to that episode in the first chunk of the conversation, and then pop back over here. Or you can listen to them backwards. I don't really care. Live your life, man. This week's episode, we on our episode are talking about Bridget Jones's Diary, the movie with
film.
Colin Firth.
Listen, I know he does it for you. He does not do it for me.
That's
fine. I don't know what it is.
Is it Hugh Grant for you?
It's also not Hugh Grant for me.
Well,
no one in that movie does it for me.
Well,
sorry.
All right. That's the end of this episode.
No, you know who does do it for me? Bridget Jones' Baby, the third movie in the trilogy when Patrick Dempsey comes on board.
Yeah. You're a Patrick Dempsey fan.
Okay. The man knows what to do with his hands.
Much like Tom Hiddleston.
I'm so turned around. I don't even know what episode we discussed that in. Oh, that's another episode.
Yeah.
We've been talking to a lot of people about Tom Hiddleston lately.
Yes, we've been preaching the gospel in case people were unaware of the gospel of Tom Hiddleston.
If Tom Hiddleston ever came on this podcast, I would just be frozen in my seat staring at him in silence.
We could.
I would just have him read monologues.
Yeah, I don't think either one of us would have the social skills to handle that conversation. I wouldn't.
So. I would try to pull something together. I would try, but I would probably. But you know what? I'm a fucking ding-a-ling normally, so there's no way that I can approach a man who like casually acts in Hamlet like once a quarter and be like, like, if we were having a seance, like, who do you want to resurrect? And he'd probably give some like really smart answer about some like Nobel Prize winner that no one knows about, but everyone should.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Well, one day we'll know. But Booklandia, yes. But
Booklandia.
So, yeah, stay tuned. Tune into this wonderful
Crosspod.
Yeah.
We were just vibing because Sky and Ford are the hosts. Yeah, Sky and Ford are the hosts of Booklandia. Mm-hmm. And like Lex was saying, they do these book reviews of these romance novels and really break down a lot of like not only the literary aspects, but just literally, did it get you hot and steamy?
Yeah.
And so we talked about the book with them on their episode, on their platform. And we were just like, did we like the book? Did we enjoy it? How did we enjoy the adaptation? And then we're talking mm-hmm. film on this episode. And we talk about Colin Firth, your love.
Yep.
We talk about Hugh Grant. We talk mm-hmm. about Renee mm-hmm. and what we liked, what we didn't like, who we would recast.
Ah, yes.
Who we would recast Ooh. If we wanted to.
Mm-hmm,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Tom Hiddleston, we can recast him. I would recast him as Daniel Cleaver, actually.
Oh, he would be fun
I
want to
see him get a little scumbag. Dirty.
Yeah.
Have
yeah.
you seen the Skyrise trailer? High Rise trailer?
No.
It's Tom's new movie. It's High Rise, and it's...
Ooh.
You know what? I'll send it to you off air. This is a tangent that we can probably edit out, but let's just fucking get to Booklandia and Colin Firth and Hugh Grant, even though I keep wanting to say Hugh Dancy, and this fucking
I was thinking
film.
Hugh Jackman, but no. All right. Hugh Grant.
Also has a new movie out.
Oh.
Yeah. A lot of new movies.
He just got all the info, all the deets.
I know. But we're bringing it back retro to the very first Bridget Jones Diary.
Yeah. So here it is. Enjoy, everybody.
Enjoy. Welcome to the chaos.
This is the same. Yeah, same.
Yeah. Amazing. Welcome to the Peony, everybody. We are so excited today. We have Booklandia here joining us today. We have Sky and Ford. If you've not heard of Booklandia, you need to go check them out. They're amazing. Thank you both so much for being here. We'll let you introduce yourselves.
Okay. I'm Ford. I'm going first.
Yes, you are.
I'm Ford. I'm one half of L. Skyford, aka Booklandia. We do a romance book review podcast and vlog and Instagram, Bookstagram, Romancetagram. So many hashtags.
Romancetagram is amazing.
Romancetagram, indeed.
It's the best.
I'm Sky, and I'm the other half of Skyford and Booklandia in all of our iterations. And we do book reviews. Usually we talk about our personal sex lives a lot more than books. It happens because we talk about whether or not the book made us hot. And if it did, it sort of slides into our DMs a lot. So that's on brand for us.
Wait, do you have a lot of people
often yell about the patriarchy?
Yeah.
There's a lot of that as well.
That's fantastic. Yeah, do you often have people sliding into your DMs after these reviews go up? Okay, I was like,
We have had some YouTube propositions, though, and they're always from Russian men, and I'm just really discouraged by that on multiple levels. And I'm always like, I know, but you don't have to prove the stereotype right.
Do they? I haven't seen these. Are they propositions in Russian? And you're like, nah, bro.
Oh, I do not engage, but they are in fact in Russian, and it's usually like, would you like to see how big my channel is? And I'm always like, nope, I do not. Thank you. Never.
That's what I'm our way. I can't wait to fuck with these people so hard.
It's like if it was me, I would go to their channel and be like, it looks like you only have 4 subscribers, so I don't think it's that big. Like, just play dumb. Just play real, real dumb.
Yeah.
Which is like my favorite rap.
And like totally dunk on their heteronormativity.
Hell yeah.
Why not?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Here to crush the spirits of men. That's the only reason I was put on this earth. yikes. We're off to a great start, everybody. So today we're talking about Bridget Jones's Diary. We were, if you haven't listened to it yet, we were on an episode of Booklandia talking about the book version of Bridget Jones's Diary. And today we're going to be talking about the film adaptation and did it do it for us? With thoughts and feelings, the epic fight scene between Hugh Grant and Colin Firth. Oh. I know Ford's very excited to talk about it. So we will be talking about it. So to kick things off, this time around, I think the answer to the question is no, but was this anybody's first viewing of it, either ever or in a really long time? What stuck out to you? Do you absolutely sing along at full volume to All By Myself with Bridget when she's getting absolutely wasted?
You go first.
Okay. I go first. It was not my first or like 10th viewing of it. I do sing along. I had Chaka Khan stuck in my head for 3 days. I'm everyone.
Amazing.
It's just everything. But it was my spouse's first time watching it all the way through. So, yeah. So Finnegan Justice Murphy of the RPG Concierge.
Yes, who we need to get on this podcast soon.
He started like live tweeting it at me. And so I only wrote down the first one. The first thing I wrote down was Universal Studios. That'll never last. And that's all I wrote down for the rest of the movie.
But that's amazing.
Since then, we've had three conversations about this movie after the fact about how everyone is terrible and no one is a nice person in the movie. And like, what is this movie actually about? Mm-hmm. And what is Bridget's actual symbolism? Like, we've had lots of in-depth conversations because in a post-Me Too intersectional feminism world, this movie does not sync really anymore.
Yeah.
It's shown its age. So it was it's been fascinating.
That's some good conversation. It is my 270th viewing, probably. Uh-huh. Yes, to all the singing, all the time. It used to be a movie that I would just put on, right? Like I have a couple of movies in my life that, like, if I need to fill space. And now that Netflix exists, that doesn't come up as often. But in the land before, when like everything was on DVD, so I've seen this movie a lot. I've seen so on the DVD, there is a director's commentary. I've seen the director's commentary of this movie. For those of you who are not old enough to remember this, you can switch over to the director's commentary. You watch the entire movie. The soundtrack of the movie is ducked down, and the director and sometimes some guests tell you like behind the scenes stories and what they thought during this shot or that shot or like funny things that happen. I am a humongous sucker for the director's commentary. I've watched many a director's commentary on movies that you probably didn't need to watch twice, but I've done it. I've definitely done it on this movie. It's good. It's got a good soundtrack. And so not my first rewatch. I do think it has been a while since my last rewatch. Mm-hmm. So there was a little bit of space. In fact, I actually had to go rebuy the DVD because I've long since gotten rid of it. Hard agree on it. Sort of not tracking, not quite. Like, there's some stuff about this that I was like, oh no, it's cringy. Yeah. It used to be funny and now it's super cringy. Also, the entire conversation about Bosnia really doesn't hold up because you're like, oh, maybe don't make fun of Bosnia. Maybe not that.
Yeah.
But
Chechnya.
Yeah. I was like, let's maybe not make fun of Chechnya.
Yeah. Not well timed. Maybe you should have done like a fake country or something. Yeah. This was definitely not my first watch of the film. I think the first time I saw it was maybe 10 years ago or something. And so I feel like every, either Christmas or Valentine's Day, I'll rewatch it. And I think the last time I watched it prior to this was around Christmas, as I sort of just background noise as I'm wrapping presents. Bridget Jones is up there, and every now and then I'll tune in and be like, oh, this moment. I love this scene. Okay, back to whatever I was doing. So it was interesting to just like sit down and watch it and not be doing something else in the background. And yeah, there are moments, even because, you know, you could try to make the argument that like, oh, maybe Darcy's the best character. And even him, I was like, must we?
Yeah.
I don't know why it like, well, no, I do, because it's an invasion of privacy. I know he sort of accidentally sees her journal, but that bothered the shit out of me. I was like, don't read that. That's not for you. I get like, oh, cute, you went and you bought her a new journal so she can start a new fresh life, whatever. But that's her personal, that's her personal like stuff and thoughts, and don't, bro, gross. I hate that. So yeah. that moment made me so mad. I was like, yeah, fuck this guy.
I actually have other issues with Darcy because he's a wet blanket.
Yeah. Also, why are you so sad all the time and just grumpy?
He's like Eeyore. He is Eeyore, yeah, but he's a wet blanket Eeyore, because actual Eeyore is lovely, but he's like Eeyore that got run over by a bus. I'm sorry, that went graphic fast.
Oh my god. So much blood in my head. All right.
Aww.
This was my first viewing, very quickly.
What?
This was
really
my first viewing. I saw it for the first time a month ago. So, okay. This is, I don't know what this says about me as a person. You name one of the most obscure niche films, and I'll be like, oh yeah, no, love that. Saw that at the Angelica, like totally. You name anything that's mainstream, and I'm like, oh no, didn't see it. So I've been on this journey to like watch all of these things that now are many, many years old to like now to be able to, I guess, like bring them back into the conversation. I don't know. But I watched this film a month ago for the first time, and then immediately within a 24-hour span, watched the second one and the third one. And Patrick Dempsey in the third one is the only thing I love about the entire trilogy. That's it. That's all. That man knows what to do with his hands. That's all I'm going to say. I'll leave that right there.
Patrick Dempsey makes me want to get naked for
that,
sure.
That deserves a Grey's Anatomy rewatch, sounds like.
Ooh, yeah, 100%.
Yeah, like, so that was one of, so the end of the movie when he leaves to go buy her a diary is one of the, like, Finn was like, you just say, don't go, I'll be right back. I'm just running to the shops. Don't go nowhere.
Yep.
Like,
use your words.
Like, and I was like, this is a fake thing. This is not real life. Like, people aren't logical. And he's like, yeah, I understand that. But just like, I'm just going to pop out of the shops. Oh, hey, you're yelling out the window at me. I hear you. Just stay there. I'll be right back. Like, it's very funny and very theatrical black moment of a story.
Yeah. But then, you know, if he told her where he was going, we wouldn't have that one of, I will say every time I'm like, god damn, the moment with the trench coat where he like wraps her up in the trench coat and kisses her, and she's like, nice men don't kiss that way. Oh yes, we fucking do. And every time I'm like, this is, see, Colin Firth could get it still, like, there you go, there's the little one line. Yeah, so there are a lot of moments where, and I feel that way so much about films, where I'm like, just use your words, just talk to the other person, and we don't have to have this whole sequence of events. What are we doing?
So it was the trench coat for you and not the moose sweater.
It's the trench coat.
Just getting a temp check of the room.
It's the trench coat, and it's the moment where they're standing in the doorway of her apartment and he looks at her and she's like, I'll be right back. And like, I think goes to change her underwear or something. There's a way that he looks at her where every time I'm like, oh my God, I need to go change my underwear. Holy shit. Like, he doesn't kiss her or anything. He just looks at her. And I'm like, this is so, Robo Dessert, / Chris, Emma and I have like forced him to watch some movies with Colin Firth. And every time he's like, I just don't get it. Like, I don't get why women are into him. I just don't see it. And I like made him watch that clip maybe three times. I was like, it's this right here. This is why. Like these small moments. And he's like, yeah, I still don't get it. He just wears sweaters, whatever. I'm like, you know what? Okay, bye.
Okay, so it was the moose sweater for Lobo dessert.
Yes, I think so.
Copy.
Mm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think my Colin Firth is the scene where he's in the boat with Natasha. Yeah. All it makes you think about is him playing Darcy in the BBC Pride and Prejudice, where he's coming out of the lake. Like the slight romance viewer inception happening there. I'm like, oh, you want me to think about him in a wet t-shirt. Got it.
Yeah. Cool. Copy.
And so for me, the moment, the great acting moment is in there. It's when he comes to the dinner party and they're prepping the dinner before everybody gets there, and they side eye each other, and it's this really soft domestic moment, and it's sort of like the moment where I went, oh, this could be like a permanent, like this is a glance at their permanent comfortability with each other, and that glance, it was like this is how you sell a movie, just like this tiny little clip right here. This is good directing, excellent acting, well done all.
Yeah, those like tender moments that are based like more on friendship and a real relationship or a real connection versus like her whole thing with Daniel, who, you know, Hugh Grant is doing what he does best, which is being so charming. But theirs is based off of this like just flirty, witty banter. And that's kind of it. And when you try to push past that, that's where, you know, Daniel's walls go up and you start to see just kind of the shithead that he is. Which I guess this kind of leads into like, what did we think about the casting for this, especially having just read the book? Mm-hmm. I know that was one of the things we wanted to talk about. And Hugh Grant is at this time was known as sort of like the rom-com lead, like Notting Hill had just come out. So now we see him break that a little.
Well, it's really interesting because the book talks about Hugh Grant's incident with the hooker, with the sex worker, so sorry. Mm-hmm. And so like the inception of that is this, like the book to movie inceptions are plentiful. So plentiful.
Well, so my significant other and I have also had a bunch of conversations about this movie because it's sort of been the thing in our house as well. And his comment was, Hugh Grant in this movie plays Hugh Grant. Like, this is not a pretend persona. This is Hugh Grant with a camera on and a fake name. And it sort of feels that way. It kind of does. Mm-hmm. He's very charming, but then he does very terrible things to his partners.
Yeah.
And he's not trustworthy. And that was sort of what was happening to IRL Hugh Grant at the time. So... Sort of self-fulfilling a little bit.
Yeah, it was one of those things like reading it and then watching it and remembering what was happening. And also because it's in the book, that moment with the sex worker, it's like I don't know if I'd been in the same situation if I would have said like, yeah, let me play this character who basically did what I did in real life and that'll be fine. It's always fascinating to me when actors are like, yeah, I'll do this thing that's pretty close to things I've experienced that are maybe a little too on the nose.
Hey, a job's a job, especially after a scandal.
Yeah, but you're Hugh Grant.
True that.
Like, I guess it's the other thing. Well, and maybe I like he just leaned into it. It was like, I'll have a good sense of humor about this because at that point in time, he could have said no. And done, you know, a film that maybe painted him in a better light or something, which I think is how a lot of people would do it. But I do appreciate that he was like, no, I'm going to play Daniel, who I know people are going to make a lot of comparisons to. And oh, well, like that, it is what it is.
I love douchey Hugh Grant. He's my favorite Hugh Grant.
I mean, it's the realest
maybe
one.
Unpopular opinion. Yeah. I mean, there's just something about like the genuineness of it that I'm like, I appreciate. I want to see an alternate timeline Bridget Jones where, because this, I don't believe this was in the book, but this was in the movie, like the kiss with Natasha. I want to see an alternate timeline of like Bridget and Natasha getting together. Because honestly, neither Darcy nor Daniel really did it for me, to be honest. Sorry.
But Natasha is so like backhandedly bitchy. It's like one of those compliment insult sandwiches.
Yeah.
No, maybe. Maybe. But I would like to see the progression of that and seeing how it evolves. Because maybe she just doesn't know how to articulate her feelings. Which isn't an excuse, but there is room to develop there.
So Skye had a book like dream ending where in the book she ends up kissing her downstairs neighbor, who is like, except for being married, a really great guy.
Yeah.
So like, why didn't that pan out? Anyway. So I went down this IMDb hole and read all the trivia about this movie. And apparently Renee Zellweger learned this British accent because she's American and then kept it through the whole filming. And so at the rap party, Colin Firth was like, what's this accent she's doing? What is this weird voice she's put on? Not realizing she had finally dropped her accent.
Oh, yeah. I only recently found out she had a southern twang.
Yeah, she's from Texas.
Blew my mind. Yeah.
Yeah. Which might be the reason why she's actually so good at doing the English accent is because like a southern accent and an English accent are pretty close in terms of dialect and where it sits in your mouth bits. I've had several dialect teachers who are like, FYI, if you are Southern, you can probably do an English accent a lot more easily than if you are from the West Coast because of the way our vowels are shaped.
Well, that explains it perfectly.
Maggie Smith, is that you?
Yes, dear.
10 points from Gryffindor. So what did we think about the casting as we kind of tiptoed around it a little bit?
I mean, there's no way I didn't reread the book and have everyone cast as their movie characters. Like Shazzer and Jude and Tom, even though they're different from the book, are those actors. It's Moaning Myrtle and those two other people. Yep.
This is now a Harry Potter episode. We're going to just pivot.
Yes. Yep. It's how there's only 10 actors in England and they do everything.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, I do think that there is, firstly, it's the casting was sort of predestined, right? Helen Fielding, when she wrote the book, she was already friends with Colin Firth and Hugh Grant, is my understanding from having watched the director's commentary. and so they were sort of predestined to play these people. And it was essentially like, ask these two. And if they say no, then like scramble for an alternate. So I feel like it was like they could influence the way the text is written for the movie because it literally is like, I wouldn't say it that way or my supposed character. And then of course the whole Colin Firth being the Mr. Darcy in the Sense and Sensibility that she watches and her
Pride and Prejudice.
Sorry. Yes. There's also BBC Sense and Sensibility, which is also good. Watch both. But yes, I'm sorry. He is Mr. Darcy in Pride and Prejudice, the BBC version. And then she watches it on TV and they cut away before he comes out of the lake because otherwise it would break reality, right? It would be the inception moment. Yeah. But then she falls in love in real life. I'm putting that in quotations with a character named Mr. Darcy, who is played by Colin. It's the Möbius loop of loving Colin Firth, essentially.
You cannot get away from him.
So is there anyone that you would recast?
I mean, Jim Broadbent is the best dad.
Yes.
He's lovely. Yeah.
He was probably my favorite, to be honest.
Yeah. I don't think so. I know there was a lot of controversy around Renee Zellweger being cast because she's not English, and I guess a lot of people wanted Kate Winslet, but I don't know if it was Helen Kate Winslet was like 25. And so I think the casting team is like, she's too young for this. We need somebody in their early 30s, which I was like, yeah, thank you for like casting someone who is the appropriate age. Because Renee Zellweger was 32.
That never happens.
I know. And I love, I was like, Kate Winslet was told she was too young for something? Amazing. Oh, joy. Really quickly. So in the book, there is that part where she, where Bridget is watching the BBC version of Pride and Prejudice, and she describes a photo that she sees of the actors, Colin Firth and Jennifer, I always forget her name.
Yule?
Jennifer Yule?
E-H-L-E?
Yeah.
Is that how you say her last name?
I think so. Sorry, Jennifer.
Elway. So sorry.
But she describes it and she's like, oh, she's in a like tweed, not tweed, but like a linen pantsuit. And he's wearing a leather jacket with a striped collar and he's got an unfortunate mustache. And I was like, this is too specific. Like, is this a real photo? And listeners and y'all, it is. I found it. I sent it to Julia and I'm going to show it to you now.
Yes.
Look at that.
No.
Look at that. I hate it.
I know.
What is happening with that mustache?
I don't know. But then there are other photos, like behind the scene photos with him, sans mustache, where I'm like, he's so hot. Who let him do that to his face? So just rest assured, if you read the book, the photo she describes is real. And dear Lord.
I remember reading that. And I remember for some reason in my mind, do you remember when like Twilight came out and then all the like,
do
the
I remember?
Leads, like Kristen and Robert and like they and Taylor did like that like big photo shoot where it was like them in a field and it was full body shots. And I was like, that's what I pictured this like Colin Firth photo shoot to be. And then I woke up this morning to that photo and my eyes literally burned out of my head and I was traumatized.
Yeah.
Lex was like, if I have to see this, you have to see this too.
Is it a blue leather jacket? It looks like a blue leather
jacket. It looks
like
a,
which is too much.
Yeah, it looks like a blue leather jacket, but I don't know if it's just the photo quality. It very much looks like a photo that's like somebody found the magazine and either scanned it on a terrible scanner or took a photo of it on like their Razer phone. So the color's a little sad. But yeah, it's got a, it's just got a lot going on.
Yeah.
So much happening. I much prefer him in a suit.
Yeah. Clean shaven. I'll take that over anything else.
Anything else.
Do we wish that he had taken his suit off for the fight scene? Because originally I read that the fight scene was supposed to be bare chested and like very, like a little bit sexy. Yeah, it was supposed to be way more, it was, because it came out comedic and a little bit like realistic, but like in a way, but it was supposed to be like, they're sweaty, they're shirtless. Like it's a very like hormone fueled moment for the female gaze. And I don't know. I just want to get like a vote of who would have preferred that version versus who liked like the little Tom and Jerry-esque.
I love the Tom and Jerry-esque so much.
Well, so in the second movie, they have another very similar fight scene, but it's in a fountain. So it does give you that wet t-shirt contest moment. Yeah. Just later, going back to the commentary, or maybe an interview. I don't know. I know a lot of trivia about this book movie.
No, it's okay.
But the two men were, when they were deciding what to do with this fight, they were like, we thought about what British gentlemen would do if they were fighting. Mm-hmm. And it would not be a movie fight. It would not be like properly thrown punches.
Yeah.
It would be to... not so
fisticuffs.
Yeah. Fisticuffs.
Like not very fit men who've literally never fought before. Who like, and I think at some point they like swat at each other with just their fingers. Because they literally like, it's just, they just don't know, right? Like it's so not part of the British upbringing in for these characters that they're like, this would be the most like the softest fight you could think of. and then it accidentally becomes extremely cartoony when they run into the Greek restaurant. Also, yeah. Can we talk about that cake? The cake at the Greek restaurant, the the Parthenon cake is so impressive.
So beautiful.
And we just ruin it.
My favorite thing about that fight sequence, I was reading an interview, I think it was Hugh Grant, one of them, was saying that initially it was supposed to be choreographed, and both of them were like, no. So it's unchoreographed, aside from the part where somebody...
Improv.
Yeah, completely improvised, because they were like, this is how the both of us would fight in real life. Like, we don't know how to do it. The only part where they used a stuntman was the part where somebody got thrown through the window. Everything else was just the two of them slapping each other, which I love that it's so messy.
The part... where Colin Firth, Mark Darcy, kicks at Hugh Grant, and then Hugh Grant just kicks back. Oh my god. This is the greatest fight scene in cinema. I will fight anyone who comes at me about it. Yeah. Like, you have John Wick, and you have the John Wick style fight scenes, and then swing that pendulum all the way across, and equal but opposite is this fight scene.
Okay.
Yeah,
agree. I agree wholeheartedly, 100%. I also, as we're talking about this, had an image in my mind of Hugh Grant doing the Black Widow, like, crotch motion on Colin Firth. Yep. And I was like, yeah, that wouldn't have been the same. I get it.
His slacks.
Anytime I see this like real man fighting scene, it's all emulating this fight scene. Mm-hmm. Isn't there one on Ted Lasso? I feel like I saw something recently on a TV show where two people are just fighting like real people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
so
it.
Good.
I love it so much.
The slapping and the, oh God, it's so goofy.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Like hugging each other.
But I think that's what makes it charming and not upsetting, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're really not so upset about the violence of it because mm-hmm. it's so funny, and it does make it real. And I do think that that to me was emotionally a lot more connective than if it were very staged. Mm-hmm. And when it happens again in the second movie. I was immediately in. I was like, this is hilarious. No matter what you're going to do from here on out, it's going to be funny because here we go again.
Yeah.
The music starts up again. You're like, oh, here we go.
Yes. Yeah. I think it's...
It's raining men. Yes.
Yes. So what do we think of like the adaptation of the film from the book? Like how did we feel about it? Do you enjoy it? Are there things you hate about it?
The movie is like if you took the book and you boiled it down into stock. Like, it is condensed.
Mm-hmm.
It's shaved and it's precise. Yes, thank you. And I can see that, like, I see where Helen Fielding shaped it to be a movie. But it's different. It's very different. Like, all the friends are different and have different lives and plot points. But, like, the core is still there. It's kind of like, it's how I feel about True Blood and the Sookie Stackhouse books. Mm-hmm. Same characters, just different.
Yeah. We talked about it on our podcast that the book is such a specific genre unto itself that it's her inner monologue and you only get her point of view. Movies intrinsically don't lend themselves to that kind of storytelling, so it does become a lot more omniscient, and though we hear her voiceovers, we do get to see everyone and we get to make our own judgments. So I think there is a peculiarity to the book and the fact that we sort of have to go along with what she says in the movie. We're able to lean into the other characters and not sort of observe her rather than be her. Mm-hmm. And I think the bunny incident, I think it's funnier in the movie. And like, mm-hmm. like she's wearing the bunny suit and writes about it in the book. And it's like, yeah, okay. But then like you see her in full bunny gear and it's like lovely and cute and hot and also sad because she's the only bunny. So also I think that movie helped Playboy sell so many bunny outfits.
really put Playboy back on the map.
Right. They were really struggling, and then Bridget Jones came out.
I feel like, I think we talked about this a little bit at the beginning of, like, the character, and I know we definitely talked about it on Booklandia. So the characters aren't super likable, and I feel like in the film, the characters are more endearing, not necessarily more likable, but they're... Mm-hmm. I enjoy Bridget so much more in the film. And I will say, like, Renee Zellweger is just, like, cute, and she has this warmth to her that... And again, you get to see her from, like, outside of herself, so you're not hearing all of some of the terrible shit she says in her diary. But it just feels a... It feels lighter than the book. It's a little more goofy, I think. Even though the book there are some really unhinged moments where you're like, what is going on? Part of me wishes, I was thinking about it, I was like, would it have been more fun if they had kept the mom, like the whole plot in the book where her mom kind of becomes a common criminal and she's ripping people off and it's way more dramatic. I was like, this kind of would have been fun to see. I also think it's more of a direct parallel to Pride and Prejudice, where I thought it was interesting that the mom is more like Kitty, or is it Lydia, who runs off with Wickham?
Kitty.
Yeah, like she's...
No, Lydia. You're
it's
right.
Lydia.
Okay,
it's
Lydia. Which I thought was... I never realized how much like Lydia she was in the film, because they cut that out. So reading the book, I was like, oh, this is an interesting dynamic. But I think for me personally, overall, I think I like the film a lot more. It was also my first introduction to this universe of Bridget Jones.
Yeah, I enjoyed the film better. That's it. That's all. That's it. Just, I hated the book, which you can listen to me talk about on Booklandia. I just found, but I do echo what's been said about the fact that it was nice to see her interacting with her environment and how she acts on the outside versus only getting her stream of consciousness, internal thoughts, which gets so fucking dark sometimes, just in terms of, like, as a woman existing in the world, there have been so many times that I have felt the shame and the guilt and the fear and the anger that, like, society and, like, my relationships with, like, family or people in my life have made me feel. And so it was very much like, I have felt this, I have lived this, I still sometimes do, I don't need to read about it. But it was interesting to see it. And I do agree, it was more endearing on the screen. And the cast is just, like, so well suited to play their roles. And yeah, the one thing that I liked in the book that I wish they would have included, but again, I understand why they didn't, is Julio bursting through into the house and just, like, trying to kill the dad and then going and hooking up with the mom upstairs. Like, that moment, I was like, if I've read through 260 pages to just get to this one moment of action, I'm fine. Like, this is the moment I've been waiting for.
Yeah, so this is, like, right, the perfect quintessential 90s rom-com movie, like, encapsulates it all. If you turn that visage around, it's really insidious, and just go with me here, and then I'll just stop talking about it, but, like, so her coworker, Mr. Fitzherbert, aka Tits Pervert, and she goes off about how he's always staring at her tits, and yet she's wearing a see-through top. Mm-hmm. Like, that's so, okay, I see a finger. Go for it. Drop it.
Just because there's a pervert in your office doesn't mean that you should change what you're wearing.
No, I understand. But she's also chastising something that, like, yes, you're right. I'm shaming, and I need to cut it out. It just feels like,
well, no, I'm gonna follow you on this because she says that she specifically wears revealing clothing to get Daniel's attention, so she does do it for the male gaze. She then has to, like, discriminates against which male that gaze comes from. So I mean, I'm not saying anyone's in the right, I'm just saying, like, right. I'm just saying her priorities don't come from like an intrinsic place. She's seeking that validation from a relationship with someone else, which I don't think is healthy for anyone.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's like, there's just dark layers. If you get real logical about this movie that aren't, don't make it a fun rom-com, or you can just ignore me and flip the scenery back and it's really cute.
It's
definitely better than the book. I will say that.
I was actually going to take us down the dark pathway. I do want to say it again. Just because there are perverts in the world doesn't mean you should not be wearing a revealing top if that's what makes you feel good.
Right, but he makes her feel uncomfortable.
That's his problem. Like, that's a problem that she has with him. It should still not dictate what she wears. She dictates what she wears, right? Because otherwise she gave him power, and that's gross and should not happen. But I do think that there's
power. He was a white man, so
yes, he does. And so one of the things that we did not talk about on our side of on our podcast is the smug marrieds and the the dichotomy of the fact that she hates going over to the smug marrieds, but yet her entire raison d'etre is really to get married and become a smug married. Mm-hmm. And she never really thinks through the, like, so it's the grass is greener on the other side, but also I hate that grass. Yeah. And that's never really addressed in how toxic that cycle is and how much she does not want to become one of those couples. But she also is actively seeking to become a couple. And I think that like that whole setup and that animosity against people who have it together in air quotes, in a way that she thinks she has to have it together, that sort of like that heteronormative misogyny is never addressed. We never talk about it. It's like everyone's got to be paired up and have bebes, like that's ultimate success, but also fuck all of them, right? Like that was really difficult for me because it's always difficult for me actually to hear a commentary where when you become a married person with children, you stop being a fun person. Yeah. I take personal umbrage with that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's like if you're single and unmarried by the time you're 30, then you're not fulfilled in any way and you're an empty shell and should just die. Versus if you're married with kids, then you have just given up your entire identity and just wait for death. Like, both are very dark and both are garbage and like completely invalidate a woman's identity as just like being a person with or without either of those things. And it is very painful to watch her like pine after these things. And you, especially in the book, there's like these like little glimmers of a moment where maybe she's like, you know what, screw this, I'm going to do whatever I want. And then she never leans into it. Instead, it keeps becoming about finding the right person or changing who she is so that way she can attract the right person. And it's like, or which, you know, and then you have Darcy who's like, I like you just as you are, which I think one of the first times I saw the film and he said that, I was like, but like, that's all anybody wants, right? Like, is to find somebody who's like, yeah, I see that you're a goddamn hot mess. And yet I'm still very attracted to you because that's who you are. And that's lovely. And you don't have to change that for anybody. Like, you get to be your whole messy self. I wish there was more of that. Like, and we got to watch her accept herself as that and fully embrace that, either with or without Darcy, would have been pretty dope. So if anybody's looking to remake Bridget Jones, there's a note for you.
Yeah. Give her some actual self-confidence.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Let her be in love with herself. Because I think that's something you don't see in either the film or the book, is like we never get to see Bridget fall in love with who she is as a person and accept all of her flaws and perfections, because she has both, I think, somewhere. Mm-hmm. Maybe not in the book. The book is a lot of wow, what?
Well, that's the other thing about like the marrieds versus like her aspiring mm-hmm. to be one and yet judging them is, I didn't see that as like, I saw that as just the way that she treated everything that she didn't have, whether it was someone that was skinnier than her, someone that was more successful in their career, someone that was mm-hmm. married. It's like when you want something so bad, but you're kind of the locus of control is external. So like, instead of saying, oh, I have to take responsibility for myself and decide who I want to be and work on myself and find those things, like it's way easier to go on crash diets, to like just fall into the arms of any man, to and then judge the people that do have it because you don't. And so that mm-hmm. that was my perception in seeing that is like, would she change her tune when she was one? Probably. So I was like, I don't know that she judges these people. I think she just judges them because she believes they have life together in a way that she doesn't. But then we see them have their own problems as well. And it's like, no, we're all human. Like no one's truly perfect. And if we define what quote unquote perfection looks like for ourselves and for our own journey, and then we live in alignment with that version of ourselves that we want to be, then that perspective is going to change how we look at others and how we look at our situations and everything about that. So that's kind of how I took it. I think it had to be an internal shift for her. And she just I echo what you were saying, Lex, of like every time that she would like choose the external as an excuse or choose like something like that, I was like, you were so close. You were so close to like self-actualization. And yet you like went down this path, and yeah, I was rooting for her so hard.
Yeah.
That was excellently put.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
You do words good.
You do words thanks. Very well.
Oh, thanks. Oh, thanks.
Yeah. Oh, so nice.
Thank you.
The smug marrieds just always are pointing out, so how's your love life? And like,
yeah.
mm-hmm. I've never done that. That's a horrible thing to do. So like, yeah. I think they deserve yeah. some of the ire for sure.
Yeah.
It's weird to watch those scenes and just be reminded of like, whenever I like go visit family, like, you know, my aunt and uncle who are part of like a much different generation than I am. And that's usually one of the first things out of their mouth is like, so are you seeing anybody? Well, aren't you going to get married? Well, if you don't get married, then what are you going to do? And I'm just like, what? Like, and it is unfortunately a situation where a lot of times the people asking that question, I'm like, I see your relationship and you don't seem to enjoy it. So why are we asking this question? And I think that's also something I always appreciate about the film. And in the book, she dives into that a little bit more. But that moment where she's like, is it one in four marriages or one in three marriages that end in divorce? Mm-hmm. And then Darcy's like, one in two.
Like, yeah.
That moment where it's like, yeah, stop asking that question. Mm-hmm. It's so rude and it's none of your business. So, yes, I would agree that they do deserve some of the hate that they get. It's being so smug. Does anybody in the film make you want to get naked?
Only Patrick Dempsey in the third one. Because again, the man knows what to do with his fucking hands. That's it. That's it. That's all. The motorcycle, the hair, the philanthropy, the fact that he's like, okay, no matter what, we'll figure it out. I'm here for you. I'm like, this is an actualized human being. Like, this is someone that has his shit together. I was like, okay. But no, not in the first one. In the first one, I was like, absolutely not.
No, I know that we're talking about the first movie, but I'm curious to know, how did you feel about never finding out whose baby it is?
I honestly felt fine about it because I think there's a difference between showing up out of obligation and showing up out of love. Mm-hmm. And I liked that the movie ended in like showing up out of love, and that there was this really great, I mean, after two and a half movies of her just consistently getting fucked over and fucking herself over and just like having like taking a step forward and then 50 steps back and just like the back and forth and all mm-hmm. of it, to see like all of these people really come out and like show up for her and be with her through it, and then at the end like still be around, I'm like, that to me, said more than finding out whose it was and then having it, like, be a box that's checked.
Yeah. That makes an excellent point, because I've constantly wondered, what is Bridget supposed to show us? And I think she shows us perseverance.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, I think about in the first movie, where she has these speeches that she makes, and they're word vomit. Like, they are the most cringy word vomiting moments. Yeah. Yeah. But she perseveres through them to get to the goal or the point.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, for me, she's really admirable. She's sort of the hot mess yardstick. And, like, watching her fuck it up constantly and still be okay, right? Like, she's traumatized. She has sad days. She has vodka-filled days. But she's still, like, the next day she's still there. So if she's the yardstick of hot mess, then I am still okay, right? Mm-hmm. Like, by comparison, yeah. I'm also going to get up tomorrow morning. And that has power.
Yeah. Yeah, and we see that in the book as well at the very, very end when she does her summary, like Jan through December, she does her summary and we look at it and it's like, you smoked how many thousands of cigarettes? You like we see the numbers, and then at the very end, she's like, overall, it was a really good year.
Progress
and
it's like, was made.
Yes, like yeah. That's the perspective. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there's something about that. Just like, yeah, perseverance is exactly the word. But I do love that, like, she rewatches the video of herself sliding down the pole into the camera lens. And then she goes back to work the next day. And I mean, like, yep. Those shitty days happen to everyone. Not that specific day, but, like, that feeling of dread. And then you just show up. And she just shows up. And that is a thing that I think about a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those moments that are cringy in a relatable way, not in a, this film didn't age well kind of way. I think are some of my favorites. Cause like y'all are saying it in, even though it's kicked up to like an 11, it is very relatable of, oh man, she really embarrassed herself during that speech, you know, introducing, what is it, Kafka's motorbike, where she just rambles for a while. You're like, what's happening here? It, you know, there are too many moments in my life where I'm like, yeah, I know that kind of pain. Like, please just let the earth crack open and take me to hell. That
Swallow
would be great.
Whole.
Yeah, that would be better than what I'm going through right now in this moment.
Yeah. To get back to your question, the movie made me want to get naked more than the book. I think it's just putting some sexy faces on some handsome men to be heteronormative. They're just beautiful people. And that fight weirdly gets me going.
Erotic? Okay.
Hey.
And then,
whatever gets you through the night.
Truth. And then Hugh Grant falls in the lake a la, you know, Mark Darst. Anyway, so just there's lots of yummy crumbs.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say it's definitely top off second base naked. Some hot mess making out.
Yes. Yeah. I would agree with that. I don't know if it's like we're getting a closed door bedroom sequence that no one knows about naked, but definitely like a messy makeout, maybe in a doorway. I don't know. For me, it's those like, it's those soft, again, like we were talking about earlier, those softer moments of the like side eye from Darcy, that doorway moment. I swear to God, maybe that's why I said doorway earlier, where he just looks at her and he's just doing the Colin Firth thing and it makes me all hot and bothered.
And you just know her Spanx dropped to her ankles.
Yeah. Also, that moment with Daniel.
She gained 35 pounds for that part. Yeah. So probably no Spanx.
Yeah.
Well, those like big
the
underwear.
Granny, yeah.
That whole scene.
That moment where he's like pulling up her dress and That, I think that's another moment because it's mm-hmm. it's real and it's goofy. It's and he's real, like, oh, yeah. my God, grandma. Like that moment where Daniel laughs about it and like makes a joke. I do love that even though we don't fully see any sex scenes, like that moment, I think so often in films, sex is like so serious and so sexy. It's like, no, it's kind of weird and funny. And to watch him see her giant granny underwear and laugh about it and make jokes and still be turned on and still be like, no, I still want to do this with you even more than before because this is fun. Like, I that's another moment that I always forget about, but I really love. And I'm always like, yeah that's
and then call okay. back that to it later on mm-hmm. when he's like, bring those big panties.
That was the only moment in the film that Finnegan like out loud laughed at. I think that was his favorite part as well.
It's
the
so
gigantic underwear.
I have to say that my want to get naked moment and my shout out. I'm going to sort of, it's a little jaded because they did hire a small Hollywood actress and then they made her gain weight for this instead of finding an actress that would fit the role in the first place. But having put that caveat aside, Renee Zellweger in all of the see-through outfits and all of the really revealing outfits, because up until this point, there really isn't a plus size lead in a movie who is showing all of her curves. This is done for comedic effect, and that is a little bit sad. But like after, like the only one I can think of after that is not until like Rebel Wilson. So it's been ages, right, between Renee Zellweger in Bridget Jones and then another sexualized woman who is not a size zero. And so that level of confidence from her, even though she's portraying a character who lacks confidence, that is the hottest thing to me in this entire movie. Yeah.
I do have a crush on her cleavage for sure.
Yeah,
it's a good curve, like it's a good pillow situation.
That moment where
she gained like weight just in her boobs. Oh. So pillowy. Okay, so sorry. Did that moment win?
There's that moment where she's wearing like the gold dress. I can't remember. I think it's the gold dress. But her boobs look so good in that dress, and I'm just like, how do I do that? How do I make them do that? Wait,
costume designers.
I know.
Have fun. Yeah, I think it's a pulley system.
Vivian Westwood being a consultant on your show really helps out, type of thing.
Oh yes,
fair.
some strategic tape, I would say. Also a little bit of boob tape, in case you don't know what boob tape is. Google that on an incognito one. you don't want that on your browser history.
Do not do that at work.
Not at work.
But like proper boob tape is worth its weight in gold.
Yeah.
Yes.
If you're looking to accentuate some pillows.
Yep. I love that her tiny underwear at the end, the one she runs through the snow wearing, are not in fact tiny.
Yeah.
They are normal women sized underwear.
I mean they've got like zebra stripes on them or something, or leopard stripes. Right. But yeah.
Animal print. But it's a regular brief. It's got like a 4-inch side to it. It's not a bikini. It's not a thong.
That
like relatable. Fucking relatable.
Yeah. And those are like the cute, sexy underwear. You're like, thank God. So any other thoughts on Bridget Jones? I don't know if there was any other things.
I mean, can I be
in
a downer for a second?
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of it has been a downer. I do want to point out that cutesy as it is, adorable as parts of it might be, we have to acknowledge that it is a privileged white woman with enough financial stability to have dinner parties, even though she has issues. They are really surface issues. And so I can absolutely say that as a white woman, I was like, hilarious, adorable. But I absolutely want to acknowledge that this may not be everyone's experience. And for some people, it might just seem like hanging out in privilege for no reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She jumps from intellectual job to intellectual job and disparages mm-hmm. her intellect while doing so.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Precisely. Yeah. She has a lot of opportunity that is available to her, and she never really acknowledges those opportunities. So I just like not, I don't mean that it's a downer. I just want to bring it to a serious moment and to acknowledge that like, it's cutesy, but like it's cutesy mm-hmm. in my privilege. It absolutely is.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's
yeah.
not a person of color in this movie.
Nope.
No. Yeah. And the only comment they make about a person of color is a racist remark they repeat multiple times.
Definitely are you talking does not about age well. Julian being orange?
No, I'm talking about Darcy's ex-wife.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how they like really heighten that trope about mm-hmm. Asian women being like,
yeah, so, and then, yeah, and then we only see one leg of the actual woman, but we make a statement, and by we, I mean them. They make a statement mm-hmm. about the entirety of the Japanese people based on this singular moment, mm-hmm. and they just keep nailing that on the head for reasons that I wish didn't exist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, Daniel kept nailing it. Yeah, yeah.
And literally. Her mom.
Yeah.
Literally. Oh, yeah. I see what you did there.
Penetration.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm a visual learner. That was really helpful.
You're very welcome. Anytime.
Wrinkles of the week.
Thank you, Julia.
I like that you do all your Foley like in real time, but it's all Foley and not pre-recorded.
Nope. It just says goofing. What?
Straight goofing. New boot goofing.
Some fresh there goofs.
Oh, Lord in heaven.
I have a recommendation that I feel like fits very well with the conversation about Perfect. Bridget Jones, kind of. Mm-hmm. So there is a TV show on HBO Max mm-hmm. called Starstruck, and it is based on Notting Hill, but it is swapped where she is the regular person mm-hmm. and he is the movie star. Mm-hmm. And he's played by Nikesh Patel, who is gorgeous and is from the new Four Weddings and a Funeral. If you haven't seen that, also Four Weddings and a Funeral, the new one on Hulu. So delightful. Okay. Anyways, Starstruck is lovely. She is not only I'm putting this in air quotes, normal person, but she is not a size zero leading lady, and we get to see her have a lot of sexual encounters and a lot of fun. And I love that women, properly sized women in properly sized situations, get screen time with their shirts off. Yes. Like, I am here for shirtless women whose ribs I can't count. No offense to the women whose ribs I can count, but like, I'd like a ratio, a better ratio mm-hmm. of plus sized mm-hmm. women to not plus sized women in successful sexual relationships on screen, and that's exactly what it is. So Starstruck, it's 6 episodes. They will have a season 2.
Right.
It's good.
Okay.
Amazing. Amazing.
Down. Like, us animated skeletons have had enough screen time. Let's let's put otherly shaped female bodies on television. I'm here for it. I agree.
There it does definitely
Reco.
Oh yeah.
Oh, go. No, go.
I was just going to say, it's definitely like it does something for, the whole representation matters. Like, when you see yourself or you see somebody who has a very similar body type to you, like, being with a really hot partner, or not even being with somebody who's also hot, but like being represented in a fashion where it's like, oh, you are sexually attractive. Like, whew. It's so nice. It's so nice. I think one of the other reasons I love the A.D. Bryant, Harry Styles, dog boyfriend sketch is like the idea of, you know, typically somebody like a woman who looks like A.D. Bryant, it is for so many people like flabbergasting that someone like Harry Styles would be attracted to her. And it's like, no, like that actually does happen it's nice to see that in real life. So, or at least in television as well. Anyway, I'm always going to bring it back to that stupid sketch. It's so ridiculous.
Well, portray, like, just showing different body types and different mm-hmm. experiences is also creating empathy.
Yes.
So, yeah. Like, I'm learning more about other people's experiences and not having to, like, ask people or be shamed about or shame people because I'm asking and from my place of privilege. Like, it's a great experience to just have these stories out there and to be learning from other people. My reco is very broad mm-hmm. in that it's all of Apple TV.
Yes.
The whole channel.
Yes.
I'm going to argue that Apple TV is the most feminist, equitable TV channel out there right now. I'm 3 for 3 on, like, feminist equality TV shows. Morning Show.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Which is 2 female leads. Dickinson, which is about Emily Dickinson. And Ted Lasso. So mm-hmm. all of these shows portray intra women like relationships in a mm-hmm. real fucking way. Like, I'm watching the morning mm-hmm. show and I'm like, are they enemies or are they friends or are they coworkers? Which, like, stereotypical slot do they fit into? And the answer is none of them, because that's not how actual relationships work. Mm-hmm. Like, female relationships are complicated and layered, and mm-hmm. you're not friends or enemies. So I'm just like, Apple TV is killing it and I can't stop.
Yes. Have you seen For All Mankind?
I haven't. Okay.
Check Ooh. That shit out. It's an alternate timeline that asks the question, what would have happened to the space race in the world if Russian cosmonauts had landed on the moon first? And it's just like, space is like the bigger background of it, and it's astronauts and it's science and it's all this, but it's like the human relationships in there, and then it explores, like, you know, the first group of women going into space, and like what within that, the intersectionality of like a Black female astronaut in space, and like all of mm-hmm. these dynamics, and like it's incredible. 2 seasons are up. It's been renewed for a 3rd. I recommend it to everyone that I talk to. But yeah. 2nd on Apple TV, crushing it right now.
Okay. Damn. Yeah. Okay. Thank you for the re-reco. The reco loop.
Reco loop. Hell yeah.
A new jingle. Yes. Julia, what's your reco of the week?
Oh, I didn't come prepared. You go first.
Okay,
I'll
great.
I'll think of something while you talk.
So mine for the week is a book titled The Secret Lives of Church Ladies by Disha Filia, I believe is how you say her name. It is a collection of short stories it's a collection of short stories about the Black female experience in America. And every story is connected in that it's somehow related to church or their relationship with church or faith or God. And it's just different generations of women. They're not all from the same family or even from the same area, but they all of the stories sort of touch on faith and how that shapes you as a person. And it is beautiful. Like, I love short stories and I love short story collections. I do find a lot of times they all start to bleed together, and maybe you're like, oh, like this one short story was great, or maybe you remember 2. I can remember every single short story in that collection. They're all so specific, and the writing is beautiful, the characters are so full of life. There are some stories that are absolutely heartbreaking. There's one, I think within the first 3 pages, I was just like sobbing uncontrollably. And then there are quite a few where I was laughing myself to tears. It's wonderful. Highly recommend it. And that's The Secret Life of Church Ladies.
How religious Christian is it?
It is more like a philosophical. So there's one story where the main character of it, she and her mom, it's called Peach Cobbler is the name of the story. This is the one that like made me bawl my eyes out. She and her mom live in a house sort of out in the middle of the woods. They struggle a lot with money, keeping the lights on. Her mom starts having a relationship with the pastor of their church, and suddenly now the lights are staying on and they now have money. But it's more about the character's resentment towards, like, the only way her mom is taking care of her is by sort of selling herself to this pastor who is married and has a son. So it's more complicated than that. It's not just like God is great. There's a lot of struggling. Like, there's one of the first story is about these two friends who their relationship develops in, these two female friends, their relationship delves into like friends with benefits over the years. One woman is very out and proud and in love with her best friend. And the other woman has sex with her friend once or twice a year, but is still very much like, I got to get married. I have to find a man. That's the way God intended. And so it's this sort of this battle of who do you pray to and where does your faith lie? So it is beautiful. It's not it's not one note. It really explores the different layers of faith. There's another one that's called How to Make Love to a Physicist. And so the two main characters have this wonderful conversation of, you know, what is God? What is, where the physicist is like, I don't really believe in religion or God, but something must have existed because the world was created. So even scientists believe that there was some sort of creator, but I don't think he really gives a shit about what we're doing. Like, isn't... has no concerns over the bullshit that humans are doing and is off creating elsewhere. So there's a lot of different points of view about it. It's religion is mentioned, but it's not, I wouldn't say it's like a religious book, if that makes sense. It's actually very wonderful how it's handled. Yeah.
Amazing. Is it up to me now?
Yeah, it's up to you.
Bring us home.
Yeah. Okay. Do it. Bring us home.
My recos of the week, I oftentimes don't prepare because it's just organic. It's literally what is giving me joy, what is fulfilling me that week, what is something that's bringing me out of the abyss of existence. And this is, I didn't intend to share this, but since we're talking romance and passion and getting mm-hmm. naked, I grew up in a household that was very, very, very much repressive to everything having to do with the body. Like, even when it came to like periods, puberty, anything like that, sexuality mm-hmm. was very much like shame, guilt around that. A lot of like conversations were not had. It was something that really affected not only my perception of sexuality, but just my relationship with my body. And it led to a lot of years of abuse on said body and mm-hmm. feeling with a lot of the things that Bridget Jones goes through of like insecurity of self and how society and family affects that. And for the past week, I've been using this app called Ferly, F-E-R-L-Y. And it is a British app that is basically built with cognitive behavioral therapy in mind. And it's, you do these modules, it's audio, you do these modules, and it is sexually focused. So it's like how to be more mindful during sex. But there's also the module that I've been doing is learning self-compassion. And so it's like learning about your body, the physicality of it, the psychology of it, the emotion of it, and learning how to love yourself, both like in a sexual way, but just in an emotional way, before anything else. And it's just these short bite-sized little audio exercises. And then it's like, all right, write down all of the things that make you anxious about being intimate or being naked or anything like that. And then it's like, okay, now rephrase that and say like, what if this wasn't true? And then write down your response to it. So just like basically has been really helping me in getting to know myself, getting to know my relationship with, you know, the vessel that I'm in on this plane, and growing my confidence in existing as a physical being. So that's been something that's really helpful. If anyone can relate to that, or if anyone needs a little bit of extra help in that regard, I highly recommend it. It's been a total game changer for me, just in the way that I see myself. Like, I look in the mirror now and my first instinct is not to nitpick every little thing. It's just to be like, hey, looking good, kid. Like, so highly recommend.
That's rad. It's called
Thank you for Furley? Sharing.
Yeah.
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 That's what I do.
And that was called Furley.
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 Yes. Awesome. F-E-R-L-Y. Mm-hmm. And it's British. So everyone is British. And there are some, like, erotic audio stories on there as well. And everyone has British accents. Yes, it is. Oh. It is steamy. Woo. Enjoy. Enjoy. Huh. I'd be creepy with this magic gem. There you go. It'll make you want to get naked.
Fantastic. Nice.
Meow, meow, meow.
There it is.
Wonderful. Well, thank you both so much.
Thank you for being here.
Yeah, if listeners,
thank you for having us.
Yeah, of course. This was so much fun. Listeners, if you have not checked out Booklandia, please do so. And where can our listeners find Booklandia?
Anywhere you find your podcasts. We are on Spotify. We are on Apple Podcasts. We are on some of the smaller platforms. You can find us on Instagram at l.skyford, and then the link in bio is, I guess, what I'm supposed to say at that point, and then link in bio. Yeah.
Perfect.
You can watch the video episodes on our Instagram, or you can head over to our YouTube as well.
Right.
Yeah. That's like the obvious reco from the PNE is like, check out Booklandia. Yes. We try to plug you anytime we can. That episode, and the thing about it is, it's not only amazing, amazing reviews of romance novels, like, it touches on so many important things. Like, your conversation about Neon Gods, where you started talking about, like, consent and the importance of consent, and how, and like, what it means, and how you reaffirm that consent. And like, that's just so fucking real, and we need more honest conversations around that being a natural part of sexuality and human relationships. So yeah, check it out. Booklandia is the fucking shit.
Hell yeah.
Well, thanks. Yay. Also, yeah, the episode on Neon Gods is like that, and the Pinnacle. Episode, the recently released episode on how to fail at flirting. There's a content warning on that episode. We talk about abusive relationships, but it needs to be out there. It needs to be said. We need to hear it because it exists, and this sheds a light on it. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Amazing. Well, thank
you
y'all.
So much for listening.
Yeah. Obviously. We fucking love you guys.
Yeah. Thank you guys.
Right back at
well,
you. Feeling
thank
mutual.
You. Yeah. Oh, it's cute. Mutual.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of The PNE, where we believe that culture informs all that we do, and art can truly be anything. If you like this episode, please leave us a review, rate us, tell all your friends to subscribe, follow, download. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode. Talk to you soon.